Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only.
Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with your host, Pete Talbot, along with Dr. Samara Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you an opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here's your host of Leading Edge Medicine, Pete Talbot.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. We have had one of the most exhilarating mornings I can remember in a while. It's just been a great 2 hours. You missed it, but we are on the air for 2 hours. Every morning between 8 and 10 on another station. But if you want to find out where we are, simply go to lmclinic.com and push the podcast button on the top of the right-hand page, and you can find out where we are for all 4 hours every Saturday morning. Hope you'll do that. And then also when you push the podcast button, you'll also get access to all of our previous hours. Last Saturday, and we go back for months, so you can go back and listen. Yeah. So if there's something that you hear today, let's say in the next couple hours, that is really intriguing to you, well, by about Monday afternoon, they will be on our website, and you can download them and listen to them right there.
Yeah, Jerry was really amazing this morning. I don't know what he had for breakfast or what he did or what where he came in this morning, and he was going on, and Pete had a very hard time controlling it.
We've just had fun, haven't we?
It's Halloween. He's not dressed up like royalty this morning.
No.
But he does sometimes, and it's just been an incredible morning.
I do have a King James outfit that I wear sometimes on Halloween, but yes.
Purple with a crown.
Purple with a crown and ermine stole and my white tights. Mm-hmm, sure.
I'd forgotten about the tights. Did you have some special boots also with it?
Yes.
Okay. We'll have to put that picture on our website sometime.
Of course we will. Yes. In any event, this show is, as it always is about you and your health. If you have a question, you need a second opinion, you're hurting, you just don't know where to turn. Maybe you're being told things by your primary care physician that don't line up with what you're hearing here every Saturday morning. Could that be? Well, you need to call in and ask a question. Officially, let me introduce Dr. Jerry Mixon, the founder and chief medical officer for Longevity Medical Clinics. 3 clinics, by the way, to serve you throughout the Puget Sound area, Tacoma, Linwood, and Kirkland. And also with us, of course, Dr. Samara Umat, who is the assistant medical director for Longevity, and also in charge of Bella Medica, by the way, which is our aesthetic division. We have a new show, by the way. It doesn't air on this station, but Lord willing, someday it will. It's called Beautiful You. It's on another station in town. But we deal with all sorts of aesthetic issues on, and again, it's called Beautiful You. Check that out at lmclinic.com or go to bellamedica.com. And find out where we are and when and all that sort of good stuff. Bellamedica.com. All right. If you've got a question, the toll-free number to call, you can do it right now, is 1-888-312-5757. 1-888-312-5757. All the lines are open, I think, right now. So if you call now, boom, you will be first up. Jerry, what we did when we started 2 hours ago is we had you do just a little recap on vaccines and where we are with the coronavirus. Maybe you could do that again.
Sure. I'm just sending an email to Samara.
Okay.
So, well, that's okay. Good to know, I guess.
I get it. Go ahead. Okay. Well, I was just distracted for a minute. Okay. Vaccines. There's been two studies now published indicating that the more vaccines you've had within the last 5 years, the higher your resistance to getting coronavirus. And it doesn't seem to matter much which vaccines you get. There's a recent study showing that flu shots, if you had your flu shot this year, you are at lower risk of getting coronavirus. If you've had your shingles, if you've had your pneumonia shots, the more immunizations you have, the lower the risk of coronavirus infection. So it would appear that there is a cross reaction. It's not that you're making antibody. It's probably your T cell, your natural killer cell production is increased by all of these other vaccines. Now, there's some speculation actually now that this might be why children as a group are so resistant to getting infected. You know, when they get infected, they can have very high viral loads and no symptoms. Mm-hmm. But most kids get no symptoms at all. That's and right. Children as a group are about 1/19th as high a risk of even getting infected. Mm-hmm. So you expose a child to the virus, they're 19 times less likely than you to actually catch the disease. And if they catch the disease, they have a very, very low instance of actually getting sick. Mm-hmm. So, and we think that's probably due in large measure because small children get lots and lots of vaccines. We start, birth, we start giving them their shots, and they get their shots at 1 and 2 and mm-hmm. 3 and 4. And when they start elementary school, they have to have their shot record, and you have to demonstrate that the kids are up to date with their immunizations. And it may well be a combination of their innately robust immune systems that their healthy young bodies have, mm-hmm. but also that large number of immunizations we give our kids may be a big part of why they are so resistant to the disease.
Yeah. You know, just off of that a little bit, I was thinking that we've been advocating for people to go get their flu shots early this year. Mm-hmm. And so far to date, we have seen less incidence of the flu. And we were hoping for that, but yes. We didn't know. We were kind of worried because of coronavirus, what would it do to the flu? So I was thinking, A, did they get the flu vaccine right, and how many of the population is vaccinated? And B, is it just a combination of the fact that because of the virus and social distancing habits, people are getting the flu less yeah. than they would normally?
And that's probably happening. People are probably a lot more persnickety about going out and getting their shot. They're probably getting their shots faster. Yeah. In fact, I've seen articles saying that many of the local pharmacies are running low on flu vaccine because people are coming and getting it. But also, you're right, the social distancing, the mask, the hand washing, all of this will decrease the incidence of flu as well as coronavirus.
Right.
Interestingly, right now in the United States, we are at record levels. We're about 78, almost 80,000 cases per day. And, you know, Mr. Biden is very upset about that and blaming Mr. Trump. I would like to point out, however, that right now in Europe, which has about the same population as the United States, they have having 180,000 cases per day.
So
we're having in the high 70s and they're having 180 a day. So far, far higher incidence in Europe than in the United States right now. More than twice ours.
Wow. Very fascinating. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't we take some calls? In fact, we can start off with, let's see, where have we got? All right. Let's just start off with Terry in Montlake Terrace. He's got some questions about CBD risk factors. Okay. Terry, welcome to the show.
Yes. I've got quite a number of risk factors, but the one that's never been tested before that I had tested in September, I have questions about, and it's the level of serum TMAO and the upper, or I'm sorry, the lower range of high risk is 10, and I'm at like 40 plus. And my information is that this is made by or can be made by certain microbes in the gut that use carnitine as their part of their food supply, and that vegetarians have low carnitine levels, don't seem to have this particular issue, and it's associated with a higher risk of buildup of sclerotic plaque. James Roberts says the science is mixed, but he personally has scaled back his carnitine intake as well. And I've been on acetyl-L-carnitine since you first formulated it, and I'm wondering, what do I do?
Okay. Well, it's not so much the carnitine as it is the choline. Choline is a component of carnitine. So the choline is rich in red meat, eggs, fish, poultry. So any of these foods that you eat, basically the high protein, animal protein sorts of foods, and are going to be rich in the choline and in the carnitine. And as the bacteria are breaking that down, as the bacteria are metabolizing the choline molecule, they make the TMAO. Not all bacteria do. And it's going to depend to some extent on what is growing in your gut. What is your particular bowel biome and the makeup of your individual bacteria? So, you know, if yours is that high, it probably tells me one of two things. You're either providing enormous amounts of choline for them to eat, or the bacterial mix in your gut is one that is especially well adapted to producing the triethylamine N oxide, which is what the TMAO
is.
What category of microbes do that that I may be able to work on or test for?
You know, I don't know. I'd have to go back and look at which specific bacterial species are doing it. All we really know is that there seems to be some people that just have a mix of gut flora that produce a lot of TMAO, and other people produce almost none. And so it's nothing I've looked at closely to say exactly which ones, and I'm not sure exactly how I would adjust your bowel flora to a low TMAO producing flora anyway. I mean, there's probably some way to do it.
I'm sure there is. I first have to know what they are.
Yeah, and I have no idea at this point.
Yeah.
So it can't be a lot of help.
I'm working with someone on this. Might be able to get some additional input on. And one of the suggestions was, because of the whole cholesterol issue, was to use red yeast rice and CoQ10, and I'm doing that. But it sounds like finding a way to scale back the choline might be a place to start. Part of the problem for me is that choline is part of the chemistry in the MTHFR chemistry to make.
Yes, it is.
And I've got genetic issues there. And to keep my homocysteine down, I need some of these other, you know, TMG and choline and other things are to keep the homocysteine down. So
yes.
I'm kind of between a rock and a hard place, it sounds like.
Well, and that's always the problem, is that, you know, for every positive, there's a negative.
That's right.
And, you know, older people need a lot more of protein to maintain our lean body mass. But that increased animal protein is going to provide us with more choline, which is going to feed the TMAO production in our guts. So it's one of those almost unavoidable trade-offs we're kind of stuck with. The goal, of course, is, you know, why did we bother getting old? You know.
Well, maybe some senescent cell therapy would help. I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. All right. Never seen a study on TMAO and senescent cell therapy, so I cannot comment. All right.
Okay. Thank you
for the call, sir. Bye-bye.
Interesting,
thank you,
Bob.
Terry.
Not a commonly known thing and not commonly done either.
Well, and the only thing that bothers me about Terry's calls is I get the feeling that 95% of the population has no idea what we're talking about.
Yes. Actually, that really bothers me a lot because I space out sometimes.
This is a fellow who does a lot of reading. He has a lot of biology knowledge. But when he calls and we get off on these tracks, I got a feeling the vast majority of our audience is saying, huh?
Well, I'm afraid that is reality. I'll keep that in mind, though, for down the track. Hey, we've got several callers here. We've got Lisa has a question about collagen. Ron from Everett, dizziness, headaches. And David has questions about PSA levels. Lots of reasons to keep listening. We've got one line open. Call us at 1-888-312-5757. We'll be back before you know it.
I fly for a living, and I change in time zones and all this other stuff, and getting colds, and when I get a cold, I can't fly. I thought, well, let's give this a shot. I started taking the supplements, and I noticed less colds, so I'm just working, you know? So then I thought, well, let's try the rest of it. But for us, it's big improvement, and that's why we stay with it.
One minutes past the hour, you're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. You're driving down the road, you're at home, and you just bumped the dial by mistake, and here you are. You found us on 570 KVI. What is this program all about? It's Leading Edge Medicine. That's what it's all about. So we take calls, and we've got Dr. Jerry Mixon, Dr. Samir, you met with us to answer those questions. And it's sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics. Okay, let us go to Everett and talk with Ron. Hello, Ron. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm an 84-year-old, and on 10-12, I was trying to get out of bed. I couldn't. I fell back and couldn't get up. And then I started to get up, and it felt like my brain moved to the left. With a bong feeling. I got up, was dizzy, equilibrium, felt like falling. And by the time I move much, any time now, I get equilibrium and dizzy. Went to the doctor on 10-14. He thought I might be having a stroke. My BP was 185 over 80. Thought it might be a stroke. Sent me to ER. After 6 hours, they did a scan, no bleeding, I'm on Coumadin, and they said go to an ear doctor, and he checked me out and said that I had no inner ear problems. I'm feeling a little better, but whenever I turn over in bed, I have a sensation of falling for a couple seconds, and I've had 3 concussions in the past 2 years.
Okay. I mean, it sounds like what you're describing is positional vertigo. And
yeah.
Sometimes it is just people actually see the world spinning around them. Other times they just fall to one side or the other. Usually they fall to the same side over and over. And this is usually something along the nerves in your inner ear, or the middle ear rather, that tell you which way is up. We have these little hair follicles in that middle ear area that there's a fluid balance. And as we change the position of our head, the fluid sloshes from one place to another. And those little cilia stimulate nerves that send a signal to our brain saying gravity is this way.
Mm. And that doctor checked all that and said I didn't have that.
Right. Mm. But it doesn't have to be there. What's happening is there's something along that nerve root, and it can be from the middle ear all the way into the brain itself. And so it can be the nerves that are transmitting those signals. It can be in the processing area of the brain that are that actually interpret those signals and turn it into something that we can use. So if the ear is okay and if the middle ear is okay, then we're looking at something neurologic higher up. Mm. And this can be triggered by viral infections. In fact, that's probably the most common cause is a virus infection. But usually when it's a virus, it gets really bad for a week or two, and then it fades away. It can also be triggered by tumor growth. That, of course, is why they probably did your CT or MRI imaging, looking to see if there were any tumors.
Tumor. Yeah, I'm on tumor.
Yeah.
No bleeding.
Okay. Well, but again, they're not just looking for bleeding. If you've got a tumor growing along the course of that nerve, it can also trigger abnormal findings.
Sure, but they put him on Coumadin, so they suspected some kind of a thromboembolic event.
Well, or he's been on Coumadin for a while. How long have you been on the Coumadin?
No, they just...
Is that recent, or is that...
About 30 years.
Oh, yeah. Wow, long time history. Okay.
So, okay. Yeah. Yeah, I got the impression the Coumadin was pre-existing.
I was mistaken. I thought they was just started.
All right. So, yeah. I mean, we're the guys on the radio. We don't have any imaging studies or laboratory testing, so we really can't make a diagnosis. But all it tells us is that somewhere between those cilia stimulated by fluid shifts all the way up into where the brain processes and interprets those, something has gone awry. Beyond that, I can't narrow it down any further.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Jerry. I think it's probably a viral infection of some kind, mm-hmm. mild, low grade, just affecting that part that is causing the symptom.
The sudden onset is consistent with a virus. And most of the time, it improves within 2 to 3 weeks. But I have seen people...
It's a little better.
Yeah, and I've seen people where it hung on for up to 3 months. Mm. But it almost always resolves. You know, it just slowly gets better and better and better until it fades away. So
okay.
I know that's not a lot of help, except to give you a little bit of hope that this is probably not the rest of your life.
Okay, my husband just texted. He says it is BPPV, and vestibular therapy is what he needs.
Okay. You want to explain what your hubby is?
That's the benign positional vertigo, which mm-hmm. is what we were talking about, and that vestibular therapy, I guess, maybe the Apley's maneuver or something else. So along those lines, so I would say go back to your ENT if it doesn't get better in another couple of weeks or so.
Mm-hmm. And just for the record, our audience, for the most part, don't know who your husband is.
Her husband.
He's not a janitor at the school district, which is a fine and wonderful job.
We wouldn't be able to say that then. In that case,
he's an
ENT physician. He's an ear, nose, and throat doctor.
That's right.
That's right. At Northwest Face, probably one of the most respected physicians as an ENT, ear, nose, and throat that you can find.
And we send him a lot of ENT problems and a lot of sleep apnea problems.
Yes, indeed.
So, so as it turns out, we got a consult from an ENT right here on the radio. It just happens to be Dr. Umat's husband, the other Dr. Umat.
That's right.
He's in two different locations, either in Kirkland or in Seattle.
Thank you.
So, all right.
There you go, Ron.
Good luck, and I hope you get better. Yeah.
Thank you, Ron. Appreciate the call. That opens up a line. And that means you can call 1-888-312-5757. 1-888-312-5757. All right. Let's go to a break just 1 minute early so we can get right smack dab back into some phone calls when we come back. All right. Don't go far. We'll be back, I think, before you know it.
I went to the Linwood office, and I must tell you, your staff is so amazing. At Longevity, they talk to you. They make you understand what's going on, and they give you the numbers so you have a starting point. And that's what I love about coming to you guys.
Oh, I love this. Come on, a little louder, a little louder. Wait for it now. All we need is a drama for people who only need a beat, yeah. I'm gonna add a little. Okay, forgive me. I just needed a little more Sly this morning. It's been 2.5 hours. I've been sitting on my butt right here in the studio, and I just needed Sly and the Family Stone. Thank you. All right. I guess that's the privilege of being the mm-hmm. producer.
The quasi-DJ.
The quasi-DJ. That's right. Yeah, I'm a frustrated. I never have been a DJ, even though I was asked at 17 to be a DJ locally. And thank God I turned it down. That would have been a horrible career. Anyway, let's get back to where we are. Let us go to the east side and talk with Lisa. Hello, Lisa. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. That music morning. Made me dance by myself in the kitchen.
Oh, good.
You know, Lisa, you are a sweetheart for saying that, because these two people here are dancing in here. I sometimes mention that, but literally,
yes.
They are dancing. Just like the
we stand on opposite sides.
Yep,
we stand on opposite sides of the table, and we just dance.
That's it. Yes. So I am happy that you felt so free to.
Well, you know, there's the old saying: dance like no one's looking.
That's right.
That's it.
And there's nobody here looking but us, and the only person in the room not dancing is Pete.
Well, I have things to do. I'm working here. Okay. Here we go. Lisa, thank you. I'm glad you're having a happy morning. How can we help you?
Yes. And I have a question on collagen. I, you know, with 8 months of not working out regularly, you end up in some aches and pains. I just turned 80 this summer. I am a patient, and I, you know, I'm in good shape. But anyway, so I was talking to my brother. He used to be a patient, actually, in Norway yesterday. And he said, why don't you try some collagen? And so, Dr. Mixon, what do you say about that?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, collagen provides the amino acids that your body needs to heal and repair. So it depends on which collagen you're using and how you get it. Okay. You know, with a Chinese wife, I get lots of collagen in my diet.
How so? Explain it.
Well, everything from tendon soup to pig's ears to chicken feet. To,
oh, God.
You know,
goodness me.
You know, the Chinese, everything except the squeal and the squawk.
I know. I walked through one of the Asian markets a few months ago, mm-hmm. and I was amazed to see the variety.
And Seth and I were over there for lunch, what was that, about a month or so mm-hmm. ago with some other friends. And I want you to know that she is an amazing cook, and she was kind enough to know that I didn't want to suck on a tendon. And it was an amazing spread. Now, were there tendons in there that I was eating?
Yes, there were. But what's happened is the tendon has been so pressure cooked that you didn't know you were eating it. It just falls apart. It's not chewy. And yes, but you find that in many Asian societies, of course, in the olden days, they were quite poor. Olden days here being the 1970s and 80s, you got to realize that 60 million people starved to death in China under Mao Zedong. So all of you budding socialists out there, remember that. You know, socialism is connected to more famine, starvation, death, and autocratic government than any system since feudalism. And the only reason that feudalism can give it a try is feudalism lasted for thousands of years, and socialism tends to destroy a society in a single generation or two.
That's right.
So, but the reality is that in those poverty-stricken years, they learned to eat everything that could be eaten. And so, you know, we do a ham. We just take the great big muscle off the thighs and the hips of the pig. They eat the ears, the snout, the jowls, the tongue, I mean, the whole thing. But that collagen is very, very rich in the amino acids that our bodies need to heal and repair.
Yeah, and I think that's an important point. When I've gone to conferences and, you know, they give you a sample of a collagen here and there, I honestly don't even know what to make of it because it's going to do nothing. That one sample doesn't mean anything. Mm-hmm. And then when I've come back and looked it up, some people will sell collagen in the guise of protein, and all of the amino acids are similar to protein powder. And that's no different than a protein powder. You're just paying extra for it to be called collagen. So you really have to know which ones you're getting. As Dr. Mixon says, the natural sources are obviously the best because your body will absorb it better. You're taking it over a period of time. Mm-hmm. The capsular form or the protein powder or the collagen powder form, that's a little bit harder.
You're getting 500 milligrams in the average capsule. Now, 500 milligrams is one half of 1 gram. And there are 35 grams in 1 ounce. So 70 pills will give you 1 ounce of collagen, all right? It's a whole lot easier just to eat an ounce of collagen. Or, better yet, you go to the store and you get yourself hydrolyzed soy and or hydrolyzed whey. And what they do is they take whey powder from the milk as they're making cheese, and the whey, they hydrolyze it, they break it down to the constituent amino acids, and you can put 2 or 3 ounces in there, that is the equivalent of 150 or more of those collagen pills, into one little glass of water or milk, stir it up and drink it. It tastes fine, and you're getting a heck of a lot more amino acid load than you would ever get from the collagen pills. At a tiny fraction of the cost.
Hydrolyzed whey or hydrolyzed soy protein?
Right. If you want the simple way, you come to our website, and it's called Optimal Lean, and you get a great big container of it, and, you know, there's a month supply, and each daily serving is probably equivalent to 150 of those expensive pills.
Wow. Wow.
That's so cool. If you, for instance, I see one on here that has bovine hide collagen peptides, sources mm-hmm. from grass-fed pasteurized bovine hide. Is that something?
It is something. Like, it's an expensive way to do it. I'd rather just use whey or soy proteins that have just been hydrolyzed and broken down to the constituent amino acids.
Okay, so
a lot cheaper, a lot easier.
I'll have to look. Yeah.
All right.
Oh,
okay.
Interesting. Okay. Yep. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome, ma'am. Bye bye.
Thank you, Lisa. That was quite interesting. Let's go to Sammamish. Talk with David. Hey, David. Welcome.
Hello.
Hello. How can we help, sir?
Yes, I'm a patient at Longevity, and I just have a question about PSA level. Mm-hmm. When I started out in April of 2018, it was around 3.9 or so, and then last October it was about 4.2, and last July it was 4.5, and just recently, this October, it was 4.9.
Okay.
And my doctor is kind of concerned about this, and even was suggesting I might consider stopping my testosterone and DHEA, which I'm reluctant to do. And he also mentioned the 4K test.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering if you could amplify on this and maybe explain more what...
Sure. Rising PSA is something that we need to take a look at, but it's not necessarily anything to panic over. PSA stands for prostate-specific antigen, and it is an antigen that is just normally produced by prostate tissue. The more prostate tissue you've got, in other words, the bigger the prostate, generally the higher the PSA will be, just because there's more prostate tissue to make PSA. Or anything that increases the metabolic activity of the prostate will raise the PSA. So you know, men that are physically and or sexually active and that have good androgen loads will normally have a little higher PSA. PSA that is rising at the rate you're describing is something that says, yeah, maybe we ought to just take a look. It's nothing to panic over. You know, if it was to double in a year, I'd be a lot more concerned. But you are nowhere near a yearly doubling rate. So a 4K test or even simple as a free and bound PSA ratio. You know, if you do a PSA ratio and you look at the percentage of free versus protein bound, if you got a free PSA that is higher than 26%, your risk of having a prostate cancer is extremely low. If that is down around 16%, now we are getting a little concerned. And if it's down around 10%, we're quite worried. Then we do the full 4K. But I'd at least do a free versus bound protein on my PSA just to see where it is.
Okay, yeah, remember the PSA can rise because of an inflammation or an infection as well, and mm-hmm. as a cancer. So it's a non-specific test, yeah. But it is important to keep an eye on it and to know what to do. So the next question, of course, is have you seen your urologist?
No, I don't really have one. You have various doctors like a cardiologist and an ophthalmologist you recommend. Do you recommend a urologist?
I don't have a particular urologist that we normally recommend, no. And I guess we probably ought to look around and see who. I guess part of our problem is we need somebody from each clinic.
Yeah, closer to each clinic. But, most of them are okay with testosterone therapy with mm-hmm. a rising PSA. They are absolutely fine with that. And initially, the important reason to send you to one is just for the investigation, mm-hmm. To see if they will consider doing some testing or to look for residual urine in the bladder, to see if the prostate size is enlarging. Do you need any therapy for that enlarging prostate or not? And that is the important reason to find out if they can do anything, not for, you know, for the testing. We can do the test for you. We can do the free free PSA versus the total PSA levels. We can also do the 4K test for you. But sometimes when they do it, it's covered under your insurance, and you don't have to pay extra for it. They can do imaging if they need to do. If they can do an MRI, that'd be great. I have urologists checking MRI with the prostate, or prostate with the MRI, rather. And that really helps us. Mm-hmm. And it reassures the patient that they're still doing the right thing and they continue with their care even when they have a higher PSA. I've had men with high PSAs who've needed prostate biopsies, and the biopsies are completely normal and they've never had to stop therapy. So just for risk stratification more than anything else, we're not stopping your therapy unless we really need to. But for risk stratification, it is important that you do get that done. And maybe ask your PCP mm-hmm. who he would send you to. And then I think we should also look, Jerry, you're right.
Well, would the PCP do it even though he hasn't seen these PSA data?
Probably. Probably, you know, if you simply ask him for a free versus total PSA.
Yeah.
And free and total, it's not a terribly expensive test anyway. I mean, we're something under $100.
Yes, we can do that in our clinic.
And, you know, we can do that for you. And that'll give us a pretty good idea about if you need further investigation or not.
Does the 4K include that?
Yes, the 4K includes that.
Yes, it does.
4K is looking at four different kinases instead of just the one.
Yeah, it's four different kallikrein markers, and what it tells us is your potential risk of developing prostate cancer over the next 15 to 20 years. Remember, cancer is a slow-growing disease process, mm-hmm. and so it helps us in risk stratification again. So it looks at your PSA, it looks at the free and total PSA, and then it looks at two other markers.
You see, the reason we talk about free versus total is that prostate cancers produce almost all protein-bound PSA, whereas healthy prostates produce a fair bit of unprotein-bound. And so by looking at the ratios of free to protein-bound PSAs, it gives us a good idea of whether or not there is a significant cancer there. Uh-huh. So the higher the free total, the less risk you have of having a tumor there.
Yeah.
That's why you said 26% or above is good.
26% above is almost no chance of a prostate cancer. 10% or less is a very high chance of prostate cancer, and in between is a sliding scale. Right.
And we keep talking about cancer. Remember, it could be an infection also. So your analysis just, be important.
Yeah. Just, or it could just be an enlarged, normal, you know, what we call benign prostatic hypertrophy.
Yes.
Old men get big prostates. That doesn't mean they're cancer-ridden. It just means they're big.
Well, at least in my last test, which was now almost a year ago, there was no evidence of enlargement.
Okay.
Okay, good.
Yeah. You do a digital rectal exam and that.
Sure. And if you're urinating freely and you're not having slow stream.
Yeah, you'll do that freely. It really slows
down. So, I mean, those are all good signs. You know, if you've got good urine flow, your last exam, your prostate did not feel enlarged on the digital exam. You know, and once more, I do the free versus total. It's a fairly cheap test, not difficult. And, that at least gives us a good statistical probability.
Yeah, the 4K is covered by Medicare, too.
Mm-hmm. It is.
4K is covered by Medicare?
Mm-hmm. It is, yeah.
How much more is the 4K test?
It's about $500.
Yeah, so, you know, instead of a $70 or $80 test, you're looking at a $500 test.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you very much for all the information.
You're welcome, sir. Helpful. Take care.
Yeah, good luck.
All right. Hey, good call. That opens up a line as we go to another break, I'm afraid. Let's have you call in here at 1-888-312-5757, 1-888-312-5757. We'll be right back.
I've been a longevity patient at the Tacoma Clinic a little over 3 months. So I've lost a bunch of weight, improved libido. I quit drinking wine, which was not easy. I really appreciate what you do.
Oh, oh, well, I'm falling in love again. Oh, 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 oh.
All right.
They're dancing.
Many's the time I've been too tired. Many's the time I've been stoned. Many a honey took all of my money, but that was when I was much younger. Made up my mind to be careful, made up my mind to beware. I was all right until Saturday night, I'm in a gown with the goldenest hair.
Yes, indeed, Jimmy Rogers. You know, I've never told you this story before, Jerry, but...
A girl with goldenest hair take all your money?
No, but Jimmy Rogers, my only, even though I dealt with a lot of professional singers when I was singing professionally back with Pat Boone and stuff in the day, in the 60s, one day we got an emergency call. Jimmy Rogers was supposed to be singing at the Democratic annual convention in Seattle.
And he had a sudden attack of Republicanism.
Well, no, I have no idea. I've never talked to Jimmy, never. I always have admired him, but he was the featured entertainment. Uh-huh. We got a call literally the morning of the convention. He got sick or something and couldn't make it, and so we were invited in, and we sang that night at the Democratic state convention. It was a pretty big deal. And the only reason I say that, my dad at the time was the executive director of the King County Republican Party. And one of the other singers.
Did you get grounded?
I was only 18, I guess, at the time. But the way we looked at it is we took their money. I think they paid us $800 or something like that, and for three kids. Anyway, so that's my Jimmy Rogers story. I don't know him, but I'm sure glad he got sick.
Because you made money.
I made money off the guy. Okay, let's let us go to Bellevue and talk to Dale. Dale, welcome to the show.
Hello, Dale.
Hi. I'm also a patient at Longevity and a patient of Dr. Maiden. Basically, I have a couple of questions about COVID, and then I also have been doing some kind of amateur research on my own here. I'm trying to answer the question of how Obamacare has affected the U.S. death rate. But my question on COVID, one of them is that why did we not develop a flu shot for the COVID virus? I realize that we're trying to get a vaccine, and my understanding of the difference is a vaccine is 100% effective, whereas flu shots, the typically ones that we get every year, are only, 70, 80, 90% effective, or, depending on, that particular shot that year. But I realize also that we didn't get our first cases until, the first of the year in January or February. Mm-hmm. But still, we could have developed a flu shot for the COVID virus at that time, and to my knowledge, it didn't happen. And my first question okay. I have is, why didn't it happen?
All right. Well, I think that part is fairly easy to answer, and that is we just didn't know enough about the virus to develop a shot. See, our flu shots, influenza is the class of organism. Okay, it's an RNA influenza virus, and it mutates every year. And every year there are 4, 5, 6 different variants of that particular virus circulating around the world. So what we do with the flu is, this is a virus that we know pretty well. We identify which variants we think are going to hit our country that fall. And we start growing a vaccine, and that vaccine starts growing in the spring, actually. It takes us from about May till fall to really grow up enough of the vaccine to be practical for us to use it. So even with a virus that has been around for 100 years and that we have studied and studied and studied since the early 20th century, it takes us 6 or 8 months to develop a shot for it. This new coronavirus, the novel coronavirus, is one that we have never seen before in human beings. Brand new. And we did not even figure out its genome until February or so. Normally, in a normal sequence, it would take us 3 to 5 years to develop a vaccine against this virus. We've done this Operation Warp Speed, where we've just basically thrown away all of the regulatory roadblocks, everything that would slow it down. We've encouraged 150 different companies around the world to jump on this and all work at the same time with different approaches trying to develop a vaccine. We've now got several. Russia has one that they have already approved and started passing out. China has one that they're giving to hundreds of thousands of people in China and offering to South America and so on. We're a little pickier about our vaccine production in the United States than they are in China and Russia. But we've got two that will be applying for approval here within the next couple of weeks. So the response has been incredibly fast compared to what would normally happen. We couldn't do what we do with the flu because we simply do not have 100 years of experience with this virus like we do with the flu. So, mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, that answers my question. Basically, we didn't really understand how different it was at the time that it first came out. So we didn't really know how to basically culture it and kill it and then inject it, I guess. The other question with regard to the COVID is that I keep hearing the CDC mentioned, and I don't understand exactly what type of an organization this is. Is it like a tax-supported institution that it's in the U.S.? Is it a private company or a corporation, or exactly what is it? Because it seems like we get an enormous number of our statistics from the CDC.
Yes.
I wonder if you could kind of clear up exactly what kind of a entity that is.
Sure. Center for Disease Control is a government agency. It's not a private company
US
at all.
Government. You know,
it is a
private?
U.S. government. Yeah, no, it's a U.S. Yeah. government agency. Okay. And so all government employees, in fact, many of the CDC are military. You know, the military health people have an awful lot of their people within the CDC. In the 1980s, we centralized all vaccine and epidemic evaluation in one organization. Before that, there were a variety of different government and private organizations that worked on epidemics. But in the 1980s, we decided we only wanted one central super government agency to do it. We developed the CDC. I'm sorry, music says we got to go to a break, but we'll be back shortly.
That's right.
I'll finish telling you about CDC.
That's right. You hang on there, and we will be back. We have to do a station ID at the top of the hour, and also a little bit of news. So get back, just hang on there for a couple of minutes, and we'll be back with the second hour of Leading Edge Medicine right here on 570 KVI.